Astra Economic Week in Review. My name is John Eckstein. I'm the Chief Investment Officer of Astra Investment Management. I am joined today by my friend and partner, Rob Stein. Rob, hello.
Hi, John. How are you?
Happy Jobs Day.
Happy Jobs Day. I missed the last one, so I'm excited to chat with you today.
You did. You missed the first one in a while, and we're back in the saddle again. So it is Friday, the 1st of April. We're a little bit after the employment situation report, and we're going to try and break that down for you, as well as cover the economic news the last couple of weeks since we've had a podcast. I can say that my nutshell view of the economy is one of continuity, continued strong growth, some worries about the future. But as far as like, to the extent that we're the weathermen who look out the window and see if it's raining, like it's not raining today. What's your nutshell view of the economy, Rob?
I would agree with maybe not quite as strong of how the economy is going. I think that the rain clouds, you know, it's not raining, but I think we can see them. And so I'm in the camp of it can blow out, right? Some things can happen where it got cloudy, but it didn't rain. But I'm a little more concerned. It was a decent number today, or at least the revision was good. Some of the other things we look at that we'll talk about later, the PMI, those look okay too. But I'm wondering how much more gas there is, even at this rate of acceleration.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And inflation, right? It's front page. Inflation matters. Eventually, it is something that forces the Fed to get more aggressive, and the Fed hasn't really proven they're good at soft landings. And maybe they wouldn't be overly bummed about a little mini recession. You know, is it possible, John, that there's sort of a couple of quarters
or decades? You are hearing some Fed governors basically saying stuff that's the equivalent of we need to stop hiring so many people, which
yesterday.
A little alarming. And you're right. I mean, for most of my career, I don't know, 90% of days in my career, the monthly cycle works around the payroll report, but it feels like the last 6 months has revolved around the inflation report, right? And it feels like that's going to be until that starts going down, at least on a month by month basis, where everybody's going to be focusing on CPI.
I agree with that. And back in the old days, I remember the numbers that you have to get in extra early for. The inflation numbers, right, were important, but the big one was always non-farm payrolls, employment situation.
Right, employment situation, number one. But back in the day, back when you and I started, it was money supply.
Remember?
Yeah.
Right.
Well, okay.
We won't... 2 o'clock on Thursdays, I think.
Yeah.
Right.
We'll have a special like nostalgia episode of the podcast sometime.
I would love to do that, especially as, you know, I'm getting older in numbers, but not in mentality. But one last thing about the jobs report being important. And, you know, we use the analogy at Aster, you know, when it's raining, we give you umbrellas. It's better than predicting it, like giving you the tool. But one of the other things we used to say is measuring the amount of people that are working on a relative basis like we do and how much stuff they're making, you know, like an output number of GDP is kind of important, right? More people working generally is a very good thing. And fewer people working, generally the opposite. Like if you're talking to your buddy who owns a business and he's telling you he's hiring a lot of people, you're just going to assume business is doing well. And then maybe he overhires. And if you hear he's laying people off, you're probably going to say, gee, things might not be as well. So it could be that simple.
Yep. Yeah. We've always said like watch the employment output trends, and we usually have a little bit more clarity into employment trends. So that's what I like to focus on. So let's break down the numbers today. So change in non-farm payrolls up 431,000. That is down from previous month of almost 700,000, slightly below the survey, but a super strong number, right? Like 400,000 is great. Unemployment rate dropped two ticks from 3.8 to 3.6%. Labor force participation rate going up, underemployment rate going down. So like more sort of specifically, one of the things that I'm very interested in is the prime age employment population ratio, which I am still barely in this group, the 25 to 54 age group. Rob is sadly out. The prime age employment population ratio has ticked up to 80%. The high of the last cycle was, let's say, like 81%, 80.5%. So very close to where we were before the pandemic. And if you break down that number a little bit, One thing that's been interesting is that the women prime age female employment population had been doing substantially worse than male, probably because of women taking care of kids because of COVID disruption or taking care of sick people. And now they are the same in terms of their.
Well, that was a reversal too of what had been happening over the last basically decade, right? So
yeah,
so it's reverted back.
Right. So there's a bunch of complicated dynamics going on. Women's female employment participation is still lower than male. But in terms of,
you know, John, I've looked at that stat, right? It was a very important stat in the 70s and 80s, obviously. But does it matter anymore? Right? A worker's a worker. And I don't know if it's like what it was. It's not, you know, yes, there's skewed to female-related jobs, but that's
changing. I think it's more, it shows you sort of like potential that's out there, right? And I think if I'm not mistaken, like, we've gone from having female labor participation substantially above peer countries to substantially below peer countries in the last 15 or 20 years. And so, you know, we could have a higher growth just by having more women work, right? That seems easy peasy. But let's move on from that, and we'll break down a little bit of the other stuff. In terms of wage growth is still strong. It's at 5.6% year on year. This is not the best reading because it doesn't account for changes in composition. We get the employment cost index later this month. But that being said, the year-on-year rate has been stable for about 6 months, and the three-month annualized rate has been dropping for 4 or 5 months. So, I mean, it's still strong, right? But if the fear is the so-called wage price spiral, where gas gets expensive, so people demand higher wages, and then they have higher wages, so they pay more for the gas. That doesn't seem to be going on, right? Like, wages are up, say, 5 or 6% year on year. Prices are up, say, 8%. So that seems to be good. And there may be early signs of the wages sort of easing. Furthermore, you also see, what you saw, say, in August was the lower wage job tier earnings being up like 11%, higher wage being up by 6%. And now the lower wage is only up like 3%, and the higher wage is still up 6% on the last 3 months. So you see a little bit of shift in that. Like, there had to be, my interpretation is that there was a big one-off increase in wages in the lower end of the job spectrum, things like in leisure and hospitality jobs in particular, to lure people back in to that sector. And so you still see leisure and hospitality jobs down 8% from before the pandemic, but, you know, that's much better than being down 20% or whatever they were.
Yeah, it is interesting where you're seeing the wages, but you have rents and housing going up, you have wages going up, not quite as fast, but also note, those are two things that are inelastic on the downside. And so if we do get sort of a reversion, or this is a short-term spike in some of the inflation concern goods, I think you're going to have to be concerned about where we have had wages go. 5.8% is a real number. And, you know, housing and rents are going up as well. So I think you have some permanent inflation here, or at least permanent higher prices, and it's going to be changing.
Prices only ratchet, right? They only go up. Prices never go down. So like the 10% that we've had over the last 18 months.
Unless you're an iPhone 6.
Yeah, I mean, forgetting about hedonic adjustments. Right. So prices only go up. The 10% or whatever we've gone up in the last year or 18 months is never going back down, right? Like, that's life. But the rate of inflation, you know, for the future, I think will moderate back towards the Fed's target, hopefully over the next 6 or 12 months. But if eggs went from $3 to $3.30, like, they're not going back to $3.
No, but John, that's an incredibly important point, right? And I wrote about this earlier this year, the definition of transitory, and it's, you know, it's viewed three different ways, right? The consumer thinks, you know, it goes from $3 to $3.30 and then back somewhere to $3, right? Investors want to grab it because it's going from $3.30 to $3.50. So they buy quickly. And the Fed, transitory to them, is $3 to $3.30, $3.30 to $3.60, $3.60 to $3.65, $3.65 to $3.66, and now it's transitory, right? So it's, that's the rate. And so you're getting those three different views. There are a lot of consumers out there that think prices are going to come back to some level that they're affordable, and raises of 6% aren't doing it. And so they're waiting. And we've always said the cure for high prices is high prices.
Yeah, that's in another blog post that's coming out next week. Yeah, so eventually you have demand destruction and you lure an additional supply and you reach an equilibrium. You can also chop up the employment number. There's a couple of places, you were talking about storm clouds. There's a couple of places I look for storm clouds, one of which is the temporary services employment. You can sometimes see the beginning of weakness there, where the idea is it's easier to not hire a new temp than it is to lay somebody off. And so that number is actually stable. It's not growing month on month anymore, or didn't grow month on month last month with this preliminary number. And it has been growing strongly, but it's stable. It's not, it hasn't gone down. So to that extent, that's not a storm cloud yet. Now, something that's a little bit harder for me to quantify because I don't have all the data is that, so there's people in the trucking market who are saying that trucking is weak now. I can't get the access to the data that they have, but, or to, you know, like my own histories of data, I can only see their charts, but what they're seeing is weakness in the trucking market. And if so, like that could be the first sort of teeny little storm cloud on the horizon.
It'd be interesting to see that, you know, the old counting boxes. I also find interesting when we're talking about wages is, and we notice this at our own firm, that wages are a very large component of expenses for most firms. And they used to run around 60, 70% of total expenses, certainly over 50 in most firms. And that number has jumped quite a bit. And it's gone closer to 80% now, particularly in food services and hospitality and things of that nature, where you have a lot of workers and employees. And I think that that could weigh on growth in some of these industries, not being able to have the profit margins, labor trying to get a bigger piece of the pie, which, you know, hasn't been the case for a while. And that could be a storm.
If you notice this week, there's a report. So overall profits, corporate profits are at an all-time high, right? Like the idea that companies are being forced to give more of their revenue or the more of their profits to workers turned out to be false, right?
Like, well, but I think that it happens gradually, right? So,
well, it hasn't happened at all yet, right? The opposite is
right.
Like, capital's getting more, labor's getting less compared to 3 months ago or a year ago.
Right. And, you know, we can save that for another day. You know, capital kind of flooded in and it was put to work and companies are still growing. So they're, the solution to everything is growth, right? The solution to debt is growth. The solution to employment is growth. Like, so they're having decent growth right now, well above trend. So you're right, that hasn't played in yet, but those wages are not going to go back the other way. And if growth does, it's going to be another headwind.
Yeah, we'll see. The other thing that we get excited about at the big turn of the month is the ISM Purchasing Managers Index Survey. So that again is asking manufacturers or service companies, how's business compared to last month? I like that number because it's not revised, because it's quite timely. So that number is a little bit weaker than it was last month, though you see within that new orders has dropped a bit. So again, if you're looking for the hints of storm clouds, that might be it. New orders dropped to more average levels from above average. On the other hand, employment is still quite strong. So a little bit of a mixed message there.
Right. It'll be interesting, right? Because, I mean, we're talking about storm clouds. It's like a lot of people, things go up a lot, they start to slow, and you think that's it. But, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if we reaccelerate after we find some level of equilibrium. You know, I don't want to sit here and you and I kind of just looking at storm clouds. They're there, but there's also scenarios where these clouds pass and we have another acceleration.
I think that's probably the most likely.
It's equally as possible.
I think it's the most likely scenario, right? We see a return to growth at some point.
Yeah, me too. It might not be till later in the year, in the beginning of next year, but I'm not so sure I would be highly concerned at this point that we're headed into a bear market / recession.
Yeah, I think so. The things that are worrying are inflation does worry you, right? Like inflation, also the idea of higher interest rates, though most people have fixed mortgages, not floating mortgages, right? So But if you've locked in 3%, good for you. You've locked it in for 30 years. It's never going to get lower than that. So you're good.
Yeah, but the adjustable people, you know, I mean,
you know, there's very few adjustable people. There's just very few adjustable people right now. It's like less than 5% of mortgages. That was surprising to me, but that's the number that I saw. So like, you know, I think you get an adjustable now, right? You're like, oh gosh, I hope rates go back to zero. So like, instead of locking in 5%, I'll get a float. But,
right, but they're mostly adjusted to like mortgages. It's more of a LIBOR. Yeah. And LIBOR is not doing what the 2 years is doing yet.
Yeah, it's not supposed to do that till the end of the year. So I also see, I've been talking about this for several months now, but I'm going to mention it again, the Astor Consumer Sentiment Index, which extracts a common trend from a bunch of different sentiment indicators, continues to decline. I'm guessing that has a lot to do with inflation, but it still worries me. You can't like say consumers are wrong. You can't argue with somebody about their feelings. Like if they're in a bad mood, they're in a bad mood. And will that have an effect on the economy or the market? Like, I don't know, but that's something I'm keeping an eye on. So Rob, before we roll out of here, do you think the data in the last month or so has changed the Fed's outlook?
Well, change or reinforce, right? When the Fed came out in December and saying that they have a different view of inflation being transitory or not, I think that was the change. And so the data that's coming out is convincing them that they're right and they better hurry and act more aggressively. And so I think it's all about the Fed. It's all about how they tell this message. And I was going back, John, and I was looking at some Fed activity in the late 70s and early 80s. And, you know, we do our reminiscing podcast. We'll talk about some of the surprise things that they did do. But what I noticed is first, the yield curve was inverted, particularly the very short end, by 500 basis points in the early 80s. They also did a 200 basis point hike right after Thanksgiving in 82, 200 basis points. So my sense is that the Fed is recognizing what they've said and that they're getting the information that's supporting their shift. They're not wavering. They're, wow, if it's changing anything, it's making me feel more certain what they want to do. And so the responses were pretty aggressive when we had this type of inflation decades ago. It wouldn't surprise me if they followed some similar aggressive pattern that Volcker followed back then.
Yeah, I mean, they don't want to get under the gun, right? So let's recall that that was in 1982. That was after 10 years of abnormally high inflation, not 10 months. But you have seen more Fed officials talking about 50 basis points. So, you know, I do think that would be on the table for some point. I guess my thinking is that the Fed hikes according to plan and cuts according to events.
And yeah, so, I love that. I love that sentence, that quote.
So I see the plan still being 25 basis points for the rest of the year. So the Fed funds market sees 8 or 9 hikes over the next 6 meetings that we have left this year. And so that implies at least 150, one or two 50s. And I think that accords with what you think, right, Rob?
Yes. I think there's going to be a 51 time this year, but they're going to where they're going.
Right. Terminal rate at the last meeting was still expected to be 2.5, 2.5, something like that. That might prove overly optimistic. And then the big unknown, of course, is the unwinding of QE, how that's going to look. Like, I think it's going to look more aggressive than last time. And they're going to move to definitely selling securities, especially the agencies, at a decent clip, you know, $50 billion a month, something like that. That's what my guess is. And I think we will leave it there. If you need more information about our view of the economy, you can check the Astor website, Astor IM, that's IM for investment management. com. You can download the Astor Research app, or you can reach out to your Astor sales representative. Thanks, Rob.
Thanks, Sean. Thanks for listening, everyone. Cheers.
To learn more about Astor Investment Management's research and strategies, please visit us on the web at www.astoriam.com or stay up to date by following us on LinkedIn, Twitter, and our app is also available on the App Store and Google Play. Thank you. Astor Investment Management, LLC, is a SEC-registered investment advisor. All information contained herein is for informational purposes only. This is not a solicitation to offer investment advice or services in any state where to do so would be unlawful. Analysis and research are provided for informational purposes only, not for trading or investing purposes. All opinions expressed are as of the date of publication and subject to change. They are not intended as investment recommendations.